Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Pop.
Views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
Welcome to another edition of the Fifth Down College Football Show. I'm your host, Chris Dietz. Usually, this is where I would introduce my co-host, The Walrus. But unfortunately, The Walrus has some issues that he has to take care of tonight. So we wish him, wish he gets all that taken care of. And hopefully, he'll be back with us next week to add his flavor to the show. So I'm flying solo tonight. So you're going to be stuck with listening to the smooth sounding voice that I have and dealing with me for the entire show. Unless, of course, you want to break it up and give us a call. Our phone number is 646-668-8467, and we'll take any calls today. Since this is an unusual show, most of the time we're going to stick to college football, and I'm going to try to do that as much as possible, but if you're listening out there and you feel the need you want to talk about any issue going on right now in the world of sports, bring it on and we'll deal with it. But until then, we will we'll push through. We have a lot to talk about this week because we had a great week of college football last weekend. Obviously, we had the Walrus Bowl in Iowa. We had USC. We had USC getting pushed against Cal. We had the Mullet going down at home against TCU. So a lot to get into from last week, a lot of changes to the top of the polls from last week. And we also have a pretty decent week this week in terms of games coming up and games that are going to make a big difference, not necessarily right away, but games we'll probably look back on when we start talking about playoffs and we start comparing teams. A lot of people are going to come back to this upcoming Saturday. A lot of people are going to look at the games that are played. It starts Friday night. A lot of the games that are played Friday night and Saturday are going to have a big impact on what happens later on down the road. So we'll get into that. And of course, we'll keep doing our best of the week. I'll give you my winners, my losers, and we'll talk about all the games from last week. And like I said, if anybody's got anything they feel I missed or they want to, they think I didn't characterize the games in their way. If you have a problem with it, give me a call. We'll definitely hash it out. We've got the time today to do that. So we'll get into that. We're going to start the show today, though. We have to start. I went back and forth in getting ready for this show. I went back and forth with whether I wanted to talk about this topic or not. And I came to the conclusion that it would be dishonest to you guys, to the listeners, if I just swept this under the rug and didn't mention it. So I'm going to hit it off right now and give you my thoughts on it. If you haven't been paying attention to the world of sports today, then this is the first time you're hearing that the FBI has implicated four Division I college basketball coaches and one university in a huge recruiting scandal where they've found that shoe companies were funneling money to coaches to steer kids to their brand, whatever brand shoe, their university, shoveling them to there, and then the university would then get the kid to go on and sign with an agent that they chose. And so there's a whole lot of money going. It's all money going around. And what happened today is Rick Pitino, the head basketball coach at Louisville, was put on temporary leave, which pretty much means in 10 days they're going to fire him. So that's where it is. And being a college, being a show that is rooted in college sports, I felt it was important to get that information out there. A lot of people are going to try to link this to college sports and lump every college sport into this and say how the recruiting process is a muddied water, and and the big hits are going to be football and basketball because that's what makes the cash. That's what brings in a lot of the money. The one thing you're not going to hear, and it's kind of the part of this that is never going to get reported, because if you watch shows like SportsCenter, if you watch shows on FS1 and you watch those kinds of things, they're going to tell you, oh, the colleges are exploiting these kids. The brands are just exploiting these kids. Well, yes, that's true. But what's also true, and they're never going to tell you, is the networks are doing the exact same thing. The networks show videos of the kids. They use the kids in the promos. They use clips in promos for the games. They use it in advertising. They use all of that kind of this. They use it as well. So they're not going to tell you. They're not going to tell you, oh, you know, kids should get all this money, and because kids should get money from these companies because they're using their likeness. Well, that includes people like ESPN and FS1 and Fox Sports and CBS. So you're not going to hear that from anybody else, but that's where the issue is that players are being used for their likeness and they're not being compensated for it. And that's going to be an issue for as long as I'm alive and probably long after. It's probably not going to change in my lifetime. Maybe in my children's lifetime. But for right now, with the landscape we're dealing with, there's always going to be a drive for cash and a drive to get that elite athlete. And that's what it's going to be about. That's how it's going to be. So I'm going to leave that topic for another day, and maybe after the season when we talk about recruiting and we're talking about that kind of stuff, maybe we'll revisit this story. But I don't think until the next shoe drops on this and we find out we find out more about this situation. I don't think there's anything we can really do to give it the justice that it needs. So with that, we're going to move on to a topic that is indicative of what is going on in college football. And it's one of the things we did a segment last week where I opened the show with things that grind my gears a little bit. And I'm gonna grind some gears right now. And the biggest problem I see in college football, and I saw it a lot this weekend, was the issue of targeting. Now, the reason why targeting exists is targeting is, well, I'll explain what it is first, and I'll get through everything. Then I'll just tell you what my problems are with it. All right, so targeting is a personal foul, and anytime there's a big hit or some kind of a hit out of bounds, some kind of a hit of a defenseless receiver or a quarterback, anytime there's a big collision, the refs on the field can call targeting, or somebody in the booth can radio down and say, hey, we think this guy targeted. And targeting is when you use the butt of your helmet to hit any part of the offensive player, or if you hit the offensive player in the head, neck, and shoulder area. So that's how it works. And usually what happens is the refs will throw a personal foul. If they say it's targeting, it goes to an automatic replay, and the replay guy reviews it and makes sure he knows what's going on. And if he deems that it's targeting, the player who committed the offense is then ejected from the game right off the bat. So that's where we are with targeting. And I understand targeting. I understand the point of it. The point of it is to get rid of – is a reaction to all the CTE studies, all the concussions. It's a player safety move that the NCAA is trying to get in. And this is where I agree with all the commentators. All the commentators, every time you see this rule said, thrown out, every commentator, I haven't seen one commentator disagree with the call. All they do is say, well, this is a great rule, and this is why we have this rule in. My problem is not with the institution of the rule. It's with the punishment of the rule. To eject someone from the game, I don't agree with the fact that if a guy happens to hit somebody in the head area, I don't think every one of those is an ejectionable offense. I do have the feeling that it's circumstantial, and I can point out some plays from this weekend. And one of them is the first play of the game in the Texas A&M game. Guy punts the ball, guy goes to catch it, and the Texas A&M guy absolutely cleaned out the returner, which was a personal foul, but he didn't go right after his head. He hit him, and when he hit him, he brought his head up, and his head happened to hit the guy in the face mask. Now, that to me is not – he didn't launch himself at a guy. He didn't go for his head. He just happened to hit him and bring his head up and happened to get a piece of him. So that to me is not an ejectionable offense. To me, that's a 15-yard penalty. We move on. Another case is in the Florida State game. In the Florida State game, they did a reverse, and the receiver was going to throw the ball back to the quarterback, and the Florida State guy went to tackle him, but he realized he wasn't close enough, so he put his hands up to block the pass, And in doing so, he happened to, on the follow-through, hit the guy in the face and hit the guy in the helmet. If you want to call that a personal foul for hitting him in the helmet, I'm okay with that. I'm not for ejecting that guy from the game. He was not trying to hit him in the head. He was trying to block a pass. So I disagree with the ejection part of this rule. The second thing I object to in this rule is you have a guy, you have defenders. Defenders are now told that they could be ejected from the game. Well, how is that fair to a defensive player when there is no such penalty on an offensive player? And being a former defensive player in my day, that's the kind of thing I look at. I mean, I was never afraid of getting tackled. I was never afraid of getting hit by a tackler. I was always afraid of a crackback block or a guy when I'm not looking and a guy comes and blocks me. Those were always the worst hits that I think you take, because not only do you take the hit, but you usually get launched, and when you hit the ground, your head smacks against the ground, and that's one of the worst ones. There's no penalty for that. If an offensive player comes down and does a crack block on a linebacker, you'll see it as, oh, that's a good block, that's a great block. Yet, if that was a defender hitting a wide receiver like that, they would be ejected from the game. So I would like to see where we can get a comparable penalty for an offensive player, and if you're going to go this route. I would like to see the ejection part taken out and make it case by case with the ejection, but that's probably not the way the NCAA is going. So my other solution is add in a penalty for an offensive player. And also you have to, if you're trying to protect, if the NCAA's whole thing is protect the players, and while I said that, I did put air quotes underneath that. If you're talking about what you're going to do to protect the players, well, then you have to protect the runners against themselves too. And you'll see runners, what do runners do when they get tackled? They dip their shoulder and they put their head right in the spot where the defenders are supposed to be hitting. So in a lot of times when you see these hits, when you see hits to the head, a lot of times it's not a guy jumping up to hit somebody in the head. It's a running back or a wide receiver running with the ball that ducks down, puts their head in harm's way, and the refs have no mechanism for saying, nope, the runner caused it. So either it's no foul or it's a foul, or you start calling fouls on the runner for putting their head in harm's way. So I would like to see that rule changed. And I would like to see how we could do that. If anybody has any ideas, again, if anybody thinks that's a good rule, if anybody thinks that's been one of the positives, definitely call in the show and we'll debate it out. Or leave us a Facebook posting. Our Facebook is Fifth Down College Football Show. On Facebook, you can find us. We'll have a debate on Facebook, and I'll bring it to the air. Whenever we have it. So those are the ways to get in touch with us. Either call us, again, the number is 646-668-8467, or, you know, jump on Facebook, give us a message on Facebook. We'll definitely hit you back, and if we don't bring it up on the show, we'll definitely have it out with you on the site, and we'll have it out there and for everybody to see. So we'll take care of it. But that's my little rant about college football for right now. And we're going to move into the actual games. We're going to move into the games that were played on Saturday. And Saturday was a quite amazing day. We had a lot of good plays. I always give you the best play that I saw over the weekend, and I don't think this is even a question of what the best play was. I've been talking about one-handed catches all year long. I've been highlighting them. Well, we finally had a catch that is able to rival the one-handed catch. I did post the video on the Facebook page, again, Fifth Down College Football Show. So you can check this. You can check all the plays that I talk about. You can check them out on the website. I try to get videos. I try to at least post links to the videos, because you can see all the fun plays that we have. This was probably one of the funniest plays that I've seen. So anyway, Rutgers is playing against Nebraska, and their tight end goes out for a pass, and the quarterback throws it right into his back. And somehow, we've heard, all Jets fans will remember the butt fumble. Well, this guy caught it with his butt. This was the butt catch. And I have to say, when I first saw this, I could not stop laughing. And I was amazed that the guy, A, caught it with his butt, and B, kept it from hitting the ground. Was an amazing athletic event. So that was my best play. That was the best play that I saw. I'm really upset that Walrus isn't here, because we had the Walrus Bowl this weekend, and in that game, there was probably the Heisman Trophy play of the year. If Saquon Barkley is able to keep it up and actually win the award, people are going to look back to the run he had. It wasn't even a run. It was a third and nine. He catches the ball out of the backfield with about 8 yards to go. And Iowa's closing in on him. He's got two guys closing in on him. And guy comes up to tackle him, and he just jumps over hurdles one guy while the other guy's hitting him, somehow keeps his balance, gets the first down, and we know the rest. Penn State goes on to drive down the field and score the game-winning touchdown. So, I thought that was pretty fantastic. I thought that was a pretty fantastic play, and it's definitely one that we will be looking at as we evaluate Saquon Barkley for many of things. But that's my – so those were my best – those were my best of the week. We had the Rutgers guy catching the ball with his butt, and Saquon Barkley hurdling people and getting hit and basically not being able to be stopped. You know how we break down. If you're new to the show, the way we break down the games is I give you some winners, and we discuss the winners and we discuss the losers of college football. And I'm going to discuss this. I start with the winners, because the winners are the easiest ones to talk about, and they don't really require much discussion. You can pretty much tell who they are and why they're the winners. But my first winner of the week was Georgia. I think Georgia really Georgia has pretty much taken out the rest of the SEC. There's Alabama. It's now there's Alabama, Georgia, and the rest of the SEC. I think what they did to Mississippi State had that title where they were the ones, all right, they're going to challenge Alabama. Mississippi State's going to be that team. Yeah, well, Georgia beat them, I think it was 31-7 or some ridiculous margin, but it wasn't even that close. I mean, Georgia just looked like they were absolutely in a league above Mississippi State. And I'm just looking up the score here for that game. And it should be somewhere around here. Here we go. Yeah, it was 31-3. So Georgia really looked good. The defense looked good. Jake Fromm at one point when I was watching the game, he was 9 of 9. So he was on fire. Their defense shut down a guy who was in discussion for one of the best quarterbacks of the SEC, and they completely shut down Fitzgerald. So Georgia is definitely a team to be reckoned with, and of course we know about the running backs. They've got a three-headed monster there, led by Nick Chubb, who is, if it wasn't for Saquon Barkley, people would be talking about Nick Chubb as the best running back. So Georgia's put themselves in a very good position, and I definitely feel like they are the team to beat. They are the team. If you're one of these people that doesn't want Alabama, that is rooting for somebody else other than Alabama from the SEC, I think you have to jump on the Georgia bandwagon, and you have to hope that Georgia meets Alabama in the SEC championship, because right now I think they're the only team that can really challenge the Tide. My second winner of the week is an odd one for us to be talking about right now. I know I mentioned college basketball earlier in the year, but usually when we talk about these teams, we're talking about them on the court. We're talking about Duke and North Carolina on the court being a big game. This one ended up being a big game, big win for Duke this week. They're now 3-0, heading into a big time game with the Walruses Miami. So that'll be a big game that we're watching this week. But Duke being 3-0, coming off a 4-win season, you know, they were a team last year that you could see them getting better as the year went on. And now I think they've got enough in place to be a sleeper team. And starting out 3-0 is definitely good for their confidence. We'll have to see how they do against Miami this week. Actually, Friday night. We'll see how they do Friday night against Miami. If they can beat Miami, then you're talking about big things for Duke. But right now at 3-0, I think Duke is in a good spot. And when you're talking about Duke football, you're talking about if they make a bowl game, they will be that's a huge season for Duke. So I think they started on that path, and a win over North Carolina is always big at Duke in any sport. So they had a big week. My third, we already talked about a little bit. I talked about Penn State. I talked about Saquon Barkley, and I struggled with putting this entire thing as my biggest win. I think the biggest win of the week was Penn State versus Iowa. I think both teams won that game. Penn State may have won it on the scoreboard, but Iowa changed a lot of minds. One of them on this show, I mean, obviously, they didn't change Walrus's mind because Walrus was already on the Iowa train. And he's been talking to me all week about Iowa and how he's okay and he's going to still rep Iowa and still push them forward. And after that game, and seeing what they did, I'm not totally against that. I'm not totally against Walrus taking that tactic. I think Iowa really showed up well. They put out a great effort. I mean, they were one play, a last second play away from beating a top five team in their own house. It would have been an amazing story had they pulled that off. But and just to stay on the Iowa train, this kid at linebacker, Jewel, the linebacker, middle linebacker, he was all over the field. And even though Saquon had his day, and we'll get to him in a minute, but Jewel was with him on every play. He was making plays. I think he had something like 15 tackles during the game. He was all over the place, and that's what you want to see from a middle linebacker. When you're looking at the next level, this is going to be a kid who's you're going to want to keep an eye on this kid. And I'm not saying he's going to be one of the top. He's not a top-level athlete. He's not a top-level guy. But he's definitely a guy who has a nose for the football. And when we start doing draft breakdown, I could easily see him right now as a very good third-round pick and maybe a late-round second, just based on his nose for the football and his ability to play that middle linebacker position. So he did a lot. Iowa did a lot to really come out of that game. Even though they lost, they still come away with kind of the moral victory, if you will. But they definitely changed. I think they changed their minds. I think if they didn't change your mind, I don't know what game you were watching, because they were in it the whole time, and they had a great game. So let's go to Penn State. Penn State had an amazing game. Saquon Barkley, he vaulted himself in the Heisman Trophy. No questions asked. If he's not your number one, I'd like to hear who your number one is, because the guy just had 300 all-purpose yards, almost 250 rushing. He had almost, I think, like 90-something catching, and he had return yardage. So he basically did everything for his team. He had two Heisman-level plays, like I said, the one where he hurdled a guy. He also had a play near the sideline where he stopped on a dime, broke a guy down, stayed in bounds, and still broke him down and went for 20 more yards. So he had himself a very important game, and it looked like he looked steps ahead of everybody else in college football. If he's not the best player in college football, I don't know who you can put better than Saquon Barkley right now. So that's where Penn State is at. And then if you're looking at evaluating Penn State as a top team, not only do they have Saquon Barkley, but the quarterback, McSorley, he changed his perception. I mean, this is a guy who, in the Rose Bowl game last year, everybody likes to talk about Sam Darnold in the Rose Bowl. Well, McSorley went step for step with him. And I think he stepped up big time on that final drive. I mean, on the final drive, Barkley twisted an ankle, and McSorley had to make do without him for little bits of that drive. And he finally stepped up and stepped in and made a big play. So what I'm going to say is that and also, if you're evaluating McSorley, their best player is the tight end Gesicki. He's the one guy that might have kept Penn State from being the all-time biggest winner of the week, because Gesicki did not have a good game. He did not, by his standards of being one of the best, him and the kid from Wisconsin are probably 1-2 in best tight ends right now. And if you were to rank them, I think you've got Gesicki 1 and the kid from Wisconsin 2. You might have it flipped around. But either way, they're right there neck and neck with each other. And he did not – I think he only caught two passes in the game. So he was kind of the guy they were taking away. And McSorley was still finding ways to get guys. And he was able to find Juwan Johnson in the back of the end zone. And Johnson is a raw receiver. He's a big body. So Penn State showed their weapons. They've got the weapons, and they showed that they can compete in a game that comes down to the wire. So that's why I put Penn State there. As far as my biggest winner of the week, the biggest winner this week had to be TCU. And TCU is the only reason why Penn State is not in this biggest winner spot, because for TCU to go into Stillwater and take out our favorite on the show, take out the mullet, and they absolutely took them to task. TCU got up, and they flexed their muscles. Gary Patterson had a great game plan. They shut down Oklahoma State for as long as you can shut down Oklahoma State, and they shut them down just enough to get where they needed to get to. As far as the defense is concerned, I mean, the game was, I think, it was 44 or 45, 38, something like that. So I know that it was a high scoring, so you're not going to talk about all of the defense. But the defense did play really well in that first half. And the offense, Gary Patterson always has a good offense, always has guys in the right spots ready to go. So he was definitely on point to shutting down Mason Rudolph, making Mason Rudolph make reads that he normally doesn't have to make, and they made the plays. They made some interceptions on him. They did get what they needed to get out of that game. And now, because of that game, TCU is now in the driver's seat as far as playing in the Big 12 title game, because we know it's going to come down to just the top two teams. Whoever the top two in the Big 12 are, they're going to meet in the championship game. So right now, if you were to look at the Big 12, you've probably got three, maybe four teams that are going to be vying for that spot: Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, and maybe Texas, if they can get themselves straightened out. Maybe Kansas State, but. Maybe Kansas State will be a team that we're talking about. But at this point, you have to put TCU with a leg up, because they have a win over one of those teams, Oklahoma State. So when you get down to it, and you get down to head-to-head matchups, when you get down to breaking down, all right, who's going to make it? Well, a head-to-head win puts you in the driver's seat for that championship spot. And that would be a big, big leg up for TCU. So I think they are the biggest winner of the week, because they are now on point to becoming having a shot at that championship game. And if they can get into that game, and if they can continue winning, if they're undefeated going into that game, it would mean they have a win over Oklahoma, and it means they're playing Oklahoma or Oklahoma State in that game, in that championship game. Now you're talking about a playoff opportunity, and that was not thought of for TCU before. So that's why it was such a big win. It was such a big game. And like I said, if you think your team, or you think there was another big winner this week, by all means, call in, give me the business, tell me why your team was the biggest. And we'll have it out. Again, the number is 646-668-8467. And like I said, if you're listening live, call us up. If you think I missed the team in my biggest winners or in the next segment, in the biggest loser segment, if you think I missed the team, missed the game, by all means, if you're listening in as a podcast, drop us a line on our Facebook page, and we'll definitely get that out to you. So, moving on. Now we're going to talk some losers. So there were a lot of, like I said, there were a lot of big games this week. There were a lot of big teams. There were a lot of big teams that went down. I mentioned some of them already. I mentioned some of the teams. Obviously Oklahoma State losing to TCU. Obviously that was a big loss. But at this point, I'm not going to put them in a big loser of the week for this reason. TCU showed to be a good team. And just because they lost to TCU, Oklahoma State still has a route back to that Big 12 title. They may have to face TCU again, or they may be able to sneak by if TCU loses to Oklahoma and loses another game in the Big 12, then all of a sudden Oklahoma State's back in the driver's seat. So they did lose a lot of ground, but they didn't lose enough to where I can say that they're totally out of it. So Oklahoma State, the mullet is still good for now. We'll see how they're able to right the ship there. So we'll stay with that. So we're okay with that. As I said, I think the biggest loss this week, I think one of the biggest losses this week was, with the exception of Georgia and Alabama, the SEC looked awful. They had an awful week, and most of them played each other. Most of the SEC teams played each other, so they kind of cancel each other out as far as wins and losses. But on the field, these teams did not look like SEC teams. Mississippi State, we already mentioned, blown out by Georgia. Obviously, they still have Fitzgerald. They still have games against Alabama coming up. They still have some time to get back into it. But after LSU, after that big win, that was a huge letdown when they went to Georgia. So that was a big blow to them. Vanderbilt, another team. They went into Alabama coming off a big win against Kansas State, a big out-of-conference win. And Alabama just blew the doors off them. Vanderbilt had no shot in this game. They had no chance. And Vanderbilt just absolutely looked like what we usually picture Vanderbilt to be. So as far as I'm concerned, I thought they played pretty terribly. Florida and Kentucky. This was, if you watched this game, you were probably, if you didn't watch this with a rooting effort, you might have liked this game. It came down to a field goal at the end, and you know, it was a 1-point victory for Florida, but that's the problem. Florida should not be beating Kentucky by 1 point. Florida-Kentucky should not be a football game. This is a game that Florida should be winning by a couple touchdowns. And because their offense is just – I can't put my finger on what's wrong with their offense. There's just something missing. And It's probably the nine guys they have suspended. That's probably a lot of what is missing in Florida. But to almost lose to Kentucky is a very poor showing. And Florida is going to have to figure something out if they want to challenge Georgia and try to challenge in the SEC championship game. Auburn, we all know what happened to them against Clemson. They got embarrassed against Clemson. And they came back, and they absolutely crushed Missouri. Missouri, that's a program that when they first entered the SEC, they were challenging for the SEC title. They played, believe it is, two. I think they played in two title games in the SEC, and now it looks like they're going to have a lot – they're going to struggle and have a lot of trouble getting back there. LSU played an out-of-conference game against Syracuse had the ball at the end of the game with a chance to win it. LSU was able to hold on, but again, these are teams that LSU should not be even letting them in the game. Syracuse is not necessarily a break them down game. They are not a team that's gonna challenge most of the time against these SEC teams. And they hung in there with LSU, so that was not a good look. Arkansas and Texas A&M, they had a shootout in Dallas. That game was very entertaining. Went to overtime. A lot of big plays, but a lot of sluggish plays, a lot of back and forth. I mean, these are two teams that are pretty much fighting for middle of the pack, and they were fighting with each other. So even though Texas A&M won in overtime, it felt like they were not an SEC type team. Not an SEC team that we're used to. So, to me, that made the whole conference. That's dragging the whole conference down. The last team, Tennessee. I don't know what's going on in Tennessee, but Butch Jones has got a lot of explaining to do. Even though they beat UMass, it was like 17-13 or some low scoring game. And again, UMass is a program that just entered Division I. They just became eligible. This is not a team that should be staying with a blue-blood SEC team like Tennessee. So for them to come out how they came out, I mean, how they lost to Florida, and then to come out and play sluggish the next week does not show a lot of promise for Tennessee or for the bottom – part of the SEC. So it was not a good week. It was not a good week for the SEC if you take Georgia and Alabama out of it, and maybe if you throw Auburn in there, but maybe you could throw Auburn in that category of not being lumped into this, but they're not up at the Georgia Alabama territory yet. And the rest of the SEC is played very mediocre. My second loser of the week is actually this was a crushing blow to Oregon. The Oregon Ducks. Everybody was trying to start up after they beat Nebraska. Oh, the Oregon Ducks are back. The Ducks are back to being a championship caliber team. Maybe they'll challenge in the Pac-12. Maybe they'll challenge for a Pac-12 championship. Well, those dreams are kind of hanging in the thread now, hanging in the balance now, because they lost to Arizona State. And Arizona State is not a team in the Pac-12 North that is going to really challenge for much. So now if you're Oregon, you probably have to run the table, and you've got Stanford, you've got Washington, Washington State. All those teams are already on your schedule. I don't even know their crossover schedule, whether they play USC or have to play UCLA or any of these other Pac-12 teams. So they're going to be in a very interesting spot as far as what they they're going to have a very tough road if they want to challenge in the Pac-12. So that was a big loss, losing to Arizona State, and that was late at night, so people may not have checked in on that game, but it was a very tough one for Oregon to take. All right. My third loser of the week. My third loser of the week is a pretty interesting one, and it's one that I wish I had Wallers here to discuss this with me, and because I feel like I take these guys to task a lot, and I feel like I beat up on these guys, but I feel like they deserve it this week. And that is ESPN College Game Day really disappointed me this weekend. I always love watching College Game Day. I love what they did, they still do it, but for some reason they didn't do it last week, and I don't understand why. I would love to hear reasons why they decided not to travel to where the biggest game was. Usually you'll see them go. College game, take the example of this weekend. This weekend you got Clemson, Virginia Tech in Blacksburg. Game day is going to be in Blacksburg. You're going to get a lot of the fan reaction and a lot of that juice. Last week, for some reason, they decided to do their show from Times Square in New York. Last time I checked, there's no football games played in Times Square. And yes, they did a lot of fluff pieces, a lot of shows of, you know, the different college bars that are in New York, and it's very, you know, it was okay, it didn't have the feel of what you usually get from College Game Day. It didn't have the feel of getting to know the small towns where these colleges are located, and I really would have liked to see them in Iowa City and see how that community would have rallied around game day being there. And they talked the entire game about how great the environment is in Iowa and how many upsets they've had, and then the game was fantastic. We talked about the game before. I talked about the game, but what you didn't get the feel that it was that big of a game. And I'm just wondering if ESPN made that decision before, or probably when the schedule came out, they said, "Oh, Iowa, Penn State's not going to be that big of a game. It's not going to be the biggest thing, so we don't have to go there. We can go somewhere else during that week." And that to me was a shot at the middle of the country. It's a shot at the small town college football. Small town is where college football, the heart of college football is. And I would have liked to see them in Iowa and see, again, how that community reacted to them being there. I just think they dropped the ball on that one, and it wasn't the program that you want College Game Day to be. You want College Game Day to be the signs, you want all the signs in the back, you want the crowd fired up, and I just did not get that feel from them being in Times Square where nobody really had anything going on. And my biggest loser of the week, we're going to try to close this segment out pretty quickly. It's pretty easy to find your biggest loser this week. Obviously, it's Florida State. I had Florida State in my top 10 despite losing to Alabama. Now they're out of the top 25 to begin with after losing to North Carolina State. The true freshman quarterback, Blackman, taking over for DeAndre Francois. Numbers-wise, 22 of 38, 278. Not bad for your first college game, but watching the game, and I said this to my buddy while I was watching the game with him, he does not look like he's ready for college football. He did not look like he was ready. And he had 2 weeks, Jimbo Fisher had 2 weeks to prepare him, and he didn't look like he was reading the defenses, the defense the way a quarterback should. He was missing passes high, missing them short. He was just not as polished as you would like a starting quarterback to be in that kind of an environment. It looked like college football, the stage was too big for him. And a lot of that can be thrown into, yeah, he's a true freshman, but I believe that he definitely did not look like the kind of quarterback that can lead Florida State right now. I think Blackman definitely has time to grow, but in that situation, because now Florida State is no longer in the title hunt. They're not dead as far as the ACC is concerned, but you still have Louisville, you still have Clemson on the schedule, you still have a lot of top teams, you still have Miami on the schedule. So Florida State has a very tough road, and they already have 2 losses. So they have to win at least one of those games, if not 2, just to make it to a bowl game now. It's going to be a struggle for them if he keeps playing the way he was. And with that, you know you have a freshman quarterback, and the defense did not help him at all. Ryan Finley and Jalen Samuels of North Carolina State, they kind of were all over the field. They were open. Jalen Samuels had one play. It was like a 50-yard. He caught the ball at about 12 yards from the line of scrimmage and then broke a tackle and ran 59 yards. And Florida State just looked out of sync, out of whack, and they just never could get back into that game. And the defense, really, a defense that has a guy like Derwin James and the pass rushers that they have, they really did not – the defense really let the team down there. And with that, Florida State really has their back against the wall. We got to see how they fight back. And hopefully we can get back to them being a big-time team. So on that note, since I talked about Florida State being a top 10, being in my top 10, I'm going to go to the top 10. I'm going to go to my top 10. Again, this is this is rankings based on teams that I think I've seen enough from all of these teams to quantify them where I have them slotted. And again, if you have an issue with the teams that I've picked, if you think there's other, I welcome you to challenge my theories. I welcome you to bring that debate to the show, whether it's bring it on Facebook or whether you're listening to the show right now and you're going to be really upset that I didn't pick your team or your team is not high enough. Absolutely, call in, give us your arguments, and who knows? Maybe you'll sway a change in the way that I view your team. But we'll take a look at that going forward. Again, the number is 646-668-8467. If you want to call in and give us your take on it. All right, so I'm going to start at the top. I'm going to start at the top because there's really not that much of a debate as far as I think 1, 2, and 3 are pretty much there above the rest. We can debate where they're slotted. I think right now I've got Alabama as my number one team. I think they have a solid defense. I think their defense is easily one or two, and you're going to go back and forth between Alabama and Clemson between who's got the better defense. I think Alabama's better on the back end. I love Minka Fitzpatrick. I think he's definitely a top level guy. When we start doing draft breakdown, he's going to be definitely a guy that I'm focused on a lot because I really like Minka Fitzpatrick. I think he can play safety. He can play corner. He's a very hybrid player and can really make things happen. So, and I think on offense with Bo Scarborough, with the Alabama offensive line, I think they can neutralize most teams. And for any team that they can't neutralize, I think the big backs that they have will help with that. But also Jalen Hurts is a sneaky guy, sneaky Heisman guy, where if he puts together some big games against opponents, he could definitely sneak into New York and probably won't win it because he doesn't have the hype and everybody looks at Alabama as not that kind of team. But I think they could easily – I think Jalen Hurts could easily be there and easily be probably 1, 2, or 3 based on what he does coming up. So I got Alabama as number one. Number two is Clemson. Or I talked about the defensive line. Bryant has looked good, and we're going to get a very good look at Clemson this week when they play at Virginia Tech. We're going to see how they can handle another big ACC game. So Clemson, I think they're right there with Alabama, and if Clemson blows out Virginia Tech, Then you're looking at maybe Clemson stealing the number one spot, but I'm not ready to put them there yet. Third, I've got Oklahoma, and Baker Mayfield has by far been the class of the quarterback play. He has been a definite. He's definitely the top of the class right now. And we talked about him a little bit last week. He's not going to be blow you away with his stats. He's not going to blow you away with his looks. He's not going to blow you away with his height, with his arm strength, all those things. He's not going to blow you away with. What he will do though is get you with intensity, fire. He's a guy I would really like to have. He's a guy I'd really like to have on my football team. I saw one play where he went to the sidelines against Baylor and he was woofing at the crowd and giving him the business. And I really like that in my quarterback. I want that in my team leader. I want a guy who can get fired up. And I think Oklahoma really has a lot behind him, and if they can put together some very good games from Baker Mayfield, they'll definitely be a player in the playoff discussion coming out of the Big 12. Number four, I've got Penn State. And again, I said, you know, that if you watch the game against Iowa, they really put everything together. They have the best player in college football, Saquon Barkley. So, and I think McSorley can do enough. Gesicki's a lineup matchup nightmare. And if they can get some play out of Juwan Johnson, if that touchdown catch at the end of the game, if that sparks him and makes him a player, now you've got another threat to stretch a defense, and now they can't just focus on Saquon. And you've got two threats in the passing game, one on the outside and Gesicki in the middle. Now you're starting to talk about Penn State being an explosive team. As opposed to just a hand the ball to Saquon and let Saquon do his thing. So I definitely think that they would be the fourth team, and like I said many times, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, when you're talking about playoffs, you're talking about the top four teams in the country, and I think right now Penn State has that spot. So moving on, the fifth spot, I'm going to keep USC as the fifth team right now. They have not looked good at all this season. I mean, Darnold threw another interception this weekend. They struggled with Cal. Cal was right with them, and Cal, we talked about last week, they were not necessarily a dominant program. So I think USC is right there, but I think they're a very vulnerable five. We're going to get to them in a little bit when we start talking about games coming up. So number six, I've got Michigan. Michigan played Purdue this weekend. It was a close game at halftime. I guess they didn't come out because Jim Harbaugh said this week that after the game, he said Purdue locker room was not up to par and making all these excuses. I've got some theories on what Jim Harbaugh was trying to do and where I think that's going, but I'll get to that maybe at the end of the show. I do like, They lost their quarterback, Wilton Spates. He went down with an injury. I think it was a concussion. I think it was concussion protocol that kept him out. Or maybe, they don't know, because that was one of the things Harbaugh talked about, was that the medical facility was not up to taking care of Wilton Spates. So they had to send him to a hospital, which I guess is, a couple blocks away from the Purdue facility. So they went with O'Korn. I thought O'Korn played really well. And I actually thought he played better in the Florida game too than Spates. So Michigan may be better off having O'Korn as their starting quarterback going forward, and we'll see how that goes. Michigan does not have a game this weekend, so at least they've got some time to figure that out. Number seven, I'm going to go with Washington. Washington played a tough Colorado team. They went into Colorado, and I think being in Boulder, they were able to beat Colorado pretty convincingly. Colorado is not known for as an offensive team, and they didn't really have the firepower to keep up with Washington. Once Washington jumped out to a big lead, Colorado's not a team that's going to come back on anybody, and especially a team like Washington. So I kept them at 7. I moved Georgia into my top 10. I got Georgia at 8. I really like this Georgia team. I think Jake Fromm has some of the ability to lead that team. And as long as you have those three running backs, and as long as Jake Fromm does not have to be the focal point of your offense, I think Georgia is going to be in a pretty good position. And as I've said, I think they're primed to meet Alabama in the SEC championship game. And now you're looking at Georgia as a possible playoff team, a definite playoff team if they could beat Alabama in the championship. If it comes down to one loss teams and Georgia's loss is to Alabama in the SEC championship, now you're going to start splitting hairs and maybe they sneak in no matter what. I think Georgia's on point at 8. 9, I've got Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin's one of those teams that they're what we call a lunch pail team. I mean, they're just a grind it out. You know you're going to go into that game. You're going to get good defense, you're going to get a lot of running, and you're going to get play action pass, which if they play a team that doesn't have a good secondary, you're going to get a team, you're going to have games where they're able to really put up a lot of, where it looks like they're putting up a lot of points, but it's really because the other team is so focused on the running game that you got the one-on-one matchups on the outside, and their quarterback is, He was a freshman last year. Started every game, so they've got experience at the key positions, and I think that will be that's something that drives Wisconsin. And we're going to see them later on. They have their schedule breaks really well. I think they play. I know they play Iowa. I think they play Iowa and Michigan this year. Those are their two toughest games. They don't get Penn State. They don't get Ohio State. So I think they're in a good spot. And I do think they are the number 9 team in the country. 10. My 10th team, 10 is a tough spot. I mentioned TCU before. The AP poll has TCU in their top 10. I'm not ready to put TCU there yet just because they beat Oklahoma State. I think I have to see more out of TCU to put them in there. I stuck with Ohio State, I think. I think Ohio State, JT Barrett still has to figure out a lot at quarterback, but I feel like Ohio State still has the talent, and their one loss was to Oklahoma. So I don't hold that against them for playing a tough game. And I think Ohio State will be able to overcome that if they can beat Penn State, if they can beat Michigan, if they can beat Wisconsin. They can be a force still in college football, even with that one loss. So that's my top 10. Again, I got Alabama 1, Clemson 2, Oklahoma 3, Penn State 4, USC 5, Michigan 6, Washington 7, Georgia 8, Wisconsin 9, and Ohio State at 10. All right. So those are our top 10 moving into this week. Like I said, this week of college football starts on Friday night. Don't think you're gonna just wake up Saturday. and watch college football on Saturday and know everything that goes on. College football starts on Friday this week with two huge matchups, and I can't wait to watch. I can't wait to watch both these games. And I'm sure the Walrus will be fired up on Friday night when Miami takes on Duke. So, like I said, Duke at 3-0. If they get past Miami here, you're looking at something special down in Durham. The Dukies are a very close team. And I think Miami, again, Miami's only had two games due to the hurricane. Last week they came out and they were actually trailing at halftime against Toledo before they blew the doors off them in the second half, like I said would happen. I didn't think that Miami would be trailing Toledo, but I thought it would be close. But what ended up happening is Toledo took the lead and then they didn't score in the second half. So Miami stepped up defensively, and I think they can. I think that's definitely going to be what prevails in this Duke game. I think that Miami defense is going to be able to hold back Duke enough to get the win. I think this game is going to be closer than people think. And, you know, whenever you have these games on Friday when you have these Friday games against when it pits a ranked team going into an underdog's house, usually those games of Thursday, Friday night games, those are tough matchups for the favorite team or for a team that's, you know, trying to reach. I mean, Miami, if they go in and they blow out Duke, you could be looking at Miami as a possible top 10 team projecting forward. So you can definitely put them on that level. So what I'm the line I have for that game, I have that game at Miami favored by 6.5. If I'm betting this game, and you know we like to do our predictions and give you some play on the spread. If I was playing this game, I would take Duke. I would take Duke to cover. I don't think Duke is going to lose by more than a touchdown. I think they're going to keep it close, and I got Miami 31, Duke 27. So I think it's within the margin. I think Duke is going to be fired up, ready to play that game. And anytime you can get a good coach like Cutcliffe. Cutcliffe is a good coach, so I think he can coach his guys up to getting out. I would say that they have the lead at halftime again, and I think Miami's able to stage a comeback, and I think that's the way Miami's going to win this game. You all know how I feel about Mark Richt, so I really don't trust Mark Richt in a big game either. So this will be a good chance for him to see if he can lead Miami a little bit differently than he led Georgia. So that's the early game. It's 7:00 on Friday. I'll definitely be trying to get a piece of that game because I really think that's going to be a good game. The other game Friday night is USC at Washington State. Now, a lot of times This is a USC game all the way. USC has the pedigree. Washington State is Washington State. They're not. They don't have the pedigree that a USC has. But I'm gonna. I feel bad about this because I felt a lot better about this before I saw that Colin Coward picked him. So I felt a lot better about my pick before I watched the Colin Coward program this morning or this afternoon. So, but he went with Washington State, and when I first saw this game, I felt like Washington State will be able to win. Sam Darnold has been prone to the turnover. I think Washington State, if he turns the ball over against Washington State, I believe they can capitalize. I think Luke Falk is actually going to outplay Sam Darnold in this game. I think Sam Darnold will throw for more. Luke Falk, I can't say Mike Leach team is going to get outpassed. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think Luke Falk's going to throw for more yards. And I also think he's better at keeping the ball away from the defense. And so I believe Washington State, I think they take this game. I got 30-24 and I got them as a 3.5-point underdog. So my upset pick, right? I'm taking the upset in that one as well, but I'm taking an outright upset to win. I'm taking Washington State to win. The next game I have on my list is Georgia versus Tennessee. If you listened to the earlier part of this program, you know how I feel about Tennessee, and I don't know what's going on there, and you know how much I like Georgia. I got this game as Georgia being a 7.5-point favorite. I don't even think that's a problem. I think Georgia takes this one big. I think I got something like 40. I got 42-17. Even though it's in Knoxville, even though it's I still don't see any way that Georgia doesn't win this game by more than 10. If it's closer than 10 points, then Tennessee either really showed me something or Georgia just didn't live up to the hype. So I'm going to say, I say Georgia big. Next game on my list if Walrus were here, he would be screaming about Iowa. And I got Iowa versus Michigan State. I actually have Michigan State as the favorite in this one. I got Michigan State by 3 points. Michigan State favored by 3. I'm going another upset. I think it's another upset. I think Iowa is able to beat Michigan State. I watched a little bit of that Michigan State-Notre Dame game, and I thought Notre Dame was able to have their way with Michigan State. Notre Dame was able to have their way offensively with Michigan State. So I think Iowa will be able to do a lot of the same things they did against Penn State. And like I said, I really like that jewel kid at middle linebacker. So I think they'll be able to hold Michigan State to under 20 points. And I think Iowa will be able to put up enough points to come out of there with a victory. I got Iowa 24, Michigan State 13. I think that's about right for that positioning. My next game I got on my list is Mississippi State versus Auburn, and I talked about Mississippi State last week. I think this is the end of Mississippi State as far as being a threat to anybody in the SEC. I think last week Georgia kind of started the downward spiral. And I think Auburn's able to continue that. However, I've got Auburn as a 9-point favorite at home. I think Mississippi State, I think they're able to put a little bit behind them. I still don't trust that Auburn defense all that much. Even though they did blow out Missouri, I think Fitzgerald is still a good quarterback. I think he's able to put some points on the board. And I got Auburn 27, Mississippi State 21. So, again, I'm taking the underdog here. I'm taking them to cover. I'm taking them to cover the 9 points. But it's one that, again, this is one that I don't really feel that comfortable about. So take it for what you want, but I got Mississippi State covering but losing the game. And that's the most important thing. If Auburn is able to win here, Mississippi State is gonna be two down and have to go to Alabama. Have to play Alabama later in the season. So that's probably a third loss, and so you're looking at three conference losses for Mississippi State, and that puts them out of the running. So I think this is – while Mississippi State had a nice run against LSU, I think Georgia kind of put them on their back, and I think Auburn put them out of their misery. Next game on my list here is I talked about Wisconsin as the number 9 team on my list. They're at home against Northwestern. I got them as a 15.5-point favorite at home. I think I would take Wisconsin. I would challenge anybody who's listening to this. If you can catch Wisconsin in a home game, Wisconsin at Camp Randall is an amazing sight, even to watch it on TV. It's definitely a place in my lifetime, if I get the opportunity, Camp Randall is one of those places I definitely want to watch a game from. I think they have a lot of fun out there. They going into the fourth quarter, they do the House of Pain, and everybody jump around, and I think they do a great job of their stadium atmosphere. So that's really my only reason to really watch this game. Northwestern, I like Pat Fitzgerald as the coach of Northwestern. I think he's done a very good job. I just think Northwestern's too tough of a team, too much tough of a school to recruit the high-end athlete that you need to compete in the Big 12. And with their academic restrictions, I think that they have they just don't get the caliber of player to really challenge a team like Wisconsin. I mean, they have Northwestern. The way Northwestern's going to win is go up against a high-powered offense and be able to step up and shut them down defensively. And that's not the Wisconsin style. The Wisconsin style is beat you up, drag the game out, and that does not play into Northwestern's hands, because that's the way they want to play, and I don't think they can keep it up with Wisconsin for the whole game. So I got Wisconsin 31, Northwestern 17, and I got Wisconsin covering that. Or do I? I don't know. I have to do the math on that. I didn't really think about the spread, but that's what I think. Let's see. No, that's a 14-point win. So I have Northwestern covering, I guess. That's basically just because I don't think Wisconsin's going to score more than 30 points. I mean, when I made my picks, I tried to make them without looking at the spread, and I think Northwestern will actually backdoor cover that game. For that, My next game I got is Colorado versus UCLA. And when I'm talking Colorado, this game I put on here because this is a big game for both these teams to basically stay alive. This is a stay alive game, and I need UCLA to win this game to make my prediction of UCLA coming out of the Pac-12, but I don't think that's going to happen. This game will be in the Rose Bowl. Colorado's a defensive team, so I think defense always travels. So I think they will be able to play enough defense on Josh Rosen to keep him in check. And I think they'll be able to get enough offense to overcome anything. I don't think UCLA has given up a lot of points in their losses. Even in their wins, they've given up a lot of points. So I think they will surrender a lot of points. And Josh Rosen's been known to throw the pick six, apparently, the last couple weeks. So I think Colorado can easily has the defensive backs to get that. So I'm going to go with – in this one, again, I'm taking the underdog. I've got UCLA by 7. UCLA favored by 7 points. And I'm going to go with Colorado with an outright win. So, again, I'm going with the underdog. I'm going with a lot of underdogs this week in my picks. So we'll see how that works out for us. But I got Colorado 42, UCLA 38. I think that will be a high-scoring game. I think that game is more of Colorado getting out to a lead and UCLA trying to come back. So that one will be a nice one late Saturday night out west. Now we get to the big game. The big game this week, the big game is Clemson at Virginia Tech. Now this one is in Blacksburg. I picked Virginia Tech to make the ACC championship game. So this could be we could see this game again later on in the season if things play out. We could see this in the ACC championship game. I think Clemson's defense is just too good to bet against as far as winning the game. I think Clemson's defense is too much for a first-year quarterback, and I do like Johnson. I think he has played really well. I think Josh Johnson has really exceeded expectations so far, and I think he can look really good. Like I said in my ACC preview, he's a dual threat guy. He does a lot with his legs that most quarterbacks can't do. And I think if he can get on a roll and throw the ball with a little bit of more accuracy and be able to get the ball out of his hand quickly against a fast Clemson defense, I think he can keep Virginia Tech in the game. And I do think this is a close one. And I've got Clemson as being a 7.5-point favorite. And I think this game comes down to a field goal. I think it'll be I've got Clemson 27, Virginia Tech 24. And I think I think Clemson's defense is able to make a play late in the game to seal the deal. But I think this is going to be one of those back and forth games, and we're going to see a lot. We're going to get to see a lot out of these two young quarterbacks. You got Bryant for Clemson, and you got Johnson for Virginia Tech. I think this is a game where both these guys kind of grow up right in front of our eyes. And I can't wait to see it. I think Blacksburg is going to be pumping. They play Enter Sandman at the start of every game, get Metallica going. You know, play Metallica and they will come. And I think that atmosphere will be able to hold Clemson down a little bit, but I think Clemson will be able to overcome that. And after this game, we'll be able to tell what Clemson is. If Clemson wins this game, they don't move anywhere. If they blow out Virginia Tech, if it's a repeat of what happened in Louisville, you could easily see Clemson move up to the number one spot and not have anybody be a. You're gonna see a lot of people drop Alabama down, and that's gonna be a. And obviously, if Clemson loses to Virginia Tech, then you're starting to talk about Virginia Tech as a possible playoff team and where they fit in this top 10. So a lot of things can happen in that game that will shape college football for the next few weeks as we start talking about it. So that's our show for this evening. Again, I apologize for the walrus not being here. He had some stuff he had to take care of at home. We hope he gets everything taken care of, and we hope he'll be back next week. We'll definitely get his opinion on the Miami Duke game. That'll be a fun thing to go over with him. And we'll be looking forward to all the action this weekend again. There is a game Thursday night, but the real games start Friday. We got a good night Friday night, and we got a good day Saturday of college football. And we hope that y'all will come back next week and join us next week for more football action. And we hope you enjoy all the football this weekend, and come back and hit us up next week. Thank you, and good night.